wants to get caught.
No.
cat. How long will rap last if it only had corny MCs? Busting heads, setting fires, 360 degrees. Backtrack.
We wanna start a trend with a super to be a trend to be reckoned with. I've been too many MCs, y'all forgetting. I got your whole group for your pupils out the nostrils back. Face mapped up like witchcraft, taking it back to walk a back.
Backtrack.
My arch enemies, I fire fight. If you think you're taking this out, you're lucky. If you think you're taking this out, you're lucky. Don't fire your every tire.
MCs get passed out like flyers. But no rhymes, you
stuck at that coke line.
You couldn't judge me if you smoke
you
mine.
You got broke nine. In 10 different ways, find out your RP.
Then we continue.
I'm gonna fuss, we got whole fans at the sea.
Ain't no man on your fire stages, get your problems, work your molecules, it's possible. We're rocking you from your core to your follicles.
Dropping true skills worldwide.
You're ripping up, restricted, my ass terrific. Label this here, a pyroglyphic.
Got you addicted, now you wanna get high. But you ain't taking fighting since you bout Jeepers with jeans, we be breaking ice.
Creating tight songs.
One style, it's never necessary. I'm magnificent, better word, we be extraordinary.
We talked through every thought, and many thought we couldn't motivate.
So hold you, ain't nothing personal. What's up, your flow, we hate
backtrack.
4-5 laws like the fertile. The embassy that makes the minimals is now being depleted. How you sound it is repeated with the ancient traffic. So the speed of rhyming as a planet. So the problem is
so
wrong.
So MCs know that I go nuts cause I bring hernia pain. Female MCs always treat me like I'm very close fame.
Cause they don't want it.
And it's simple, I break it down like enzymes. It's still got lyrical microbiologists decoding my rhymes. DNA structure.
Fluctuate, break dictation with them. Crush the veins in the crowd of illustrations. It's amazing what's coming out the project. Like suburban families cleaning out their hallway closets.
Toss it right into sockets to wanna be part of profit. And that cause if you don't dock it, I'm stopping you through the whopping. You flopping, you popping, please. It's up to me to stop it. Got two suckers on these. External, my spirit is flopping.
Backtrack.
Burning all those who wanna be copycatted. Who try to score runs when they swing, but they stop be batted. You're gonna be in choppy matters when you're surrounded by menaces. I keep my flow difficult to their vocal, but they be hearing it.
I'm rocking now, so reminiscent. Check your data, this data. Suns around the world like the equator. So get your blue blood. I got my knocker, the sun is shit at nine. Swinging the Batman and robbing dope that I find.
Backtrack! Engine number 17. Like gasoline and pass the team to lead to the finish line. On the nomination tip, cause you try. Live it mine, give it time.
You can spray with murderous rhyme. Like pressing cross, move topping with Tupac. My habit set traffic, leaving thoughts gridlock. For 2 blocks, and 22 blocks. Stalk a mile in no shoes. I'm walking on lava, and still running through food. Blast the crews and fools.
Get time to hear my sermon, serve a lot slaves to the mob, learn. They just be squirting merchants with the force of our mathematics. It's fancy, too drastic, it's growing enormous like the sword of the axe.
Backtrack! MCs try to mess with these. Don't be like a rhyme, I'm forever shaking up my trees. Do it please, these are your props and cheese. It's the dirty rap trap with raps at ease. Pussy cats please.
With coordination like masturbation. Giving birth to styles and flows. With artificial insemination through penetration. I make the climax, you see me coming in 3D. But you and I'm at.
Rated PG, for perfect grammar, I be sensitive to street speaking. Incredible, he's seeking. Disintegrated rap boots and high price attire. Extinguish the fire, man, now putting out the fire. We take the high.
Backtrack!
Des fois la femme qui prend les trompes, qui rend au max sa diagramme. Alarmant l'armement, cause agression, coup et blessure. Je crache mon venin lyrique sans poisonner comme du cyanure. Avec un don de l'écriture, un sang pur, un feu dur qui crame. Des spécialistes qui tranchent la séquité, la pierre d'acide
chale. Rien n'a changé, spécialiste en micro danger. Un trou garçon d'étranger, qui planche et bien dérangé. L'ennemi flanche pour ses us enclenchés, pour pas des plages.
Maintenant,
c'est le temps, claque terre et déclenché. On se lance dans la bataille, ça vient du cœur et des entrailles. Impossible de faire de détails, un peu de pur, ça détravaille. Un plastique comme l'arme. C'est la cible de notre armada. Premier coup d'être là, on fout le feu dès le début de la craga.
On fout le feu, 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 on fout le feu,
on fout le feu dans le ghetto, d'autres d'un côté d'accord. Coup de feu, on fait sauter les troupes, nos stratégies s'accordent. Porte vocale, rafale de balles, traces à guerre, chef de section, en micro-mission verbale.
Du réalisme, qu'on catalyse, notre force fait donc une analyse. Faut qu'on rivalise dans le but de les esprits, on dévalise, double la mise. À chaque apparition, c'est une mission à risque, plus dangereuse, plus cancéreuse. À chaque sortie de disque,
rime incendiaire. Et tes salles qui datent pas d'hier, d'hier. Mon arc clair contre tu adversaire, ta face meurtrière. Nous qui cause des faits divers, partenaires de guerre. Condamné, on se retrouve coupable d'être explosé comme des grenades.
Une faction sur la France et sur le monde contre les factions. Ce monde, avant qu'explose la bombe, passe à l'action. Au plafond, c'est une élévation. Spéciale mission, c'est une vraie hécatombe. On fout le feu, on fout le feu.
Le MIC, MC, quand sur la verse on s'est dit MIC, reste pas ici MC. Le MIC, quand sur la verse notre son suisse, spécialiste, plus besoin de m'en déguiser.
C'est du Volkoska, chèque dans la route, c'est du route, je l'irai de bouche, car on fera du coup, on fera tourner la roue. Faut que ça crame, c'est la seule trame, en vie usagée, sonne l'alarme, car tous mes gars sont enragés.
Que mes mots jamais je les mâche, arrache, je ramasse les grandes belles si tu me fâches.
C'est comme une interpellation qui se passe pas, c'est pas seulement une appellation, je me fera pas.
Décroche la fromage, depuis des années que je cramache, alors lâche-moi le gâche, lorsque trop de sale je te crache.
Phénoménal sale, sur flamme légale, je flâche, ou je la rage, et ça fait même sortir les coups de la carte. On fout le feu, 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 on fout le feu. On fout le feu, 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 on fout le feu.
Don't. Space Station 5, the channel with a sympathetic English accent.
Thank you. I got a freaky, freaky, freak. Give you a freak, you turn them out. I put the hoes in the row and turn out queens, no doubt. Don't need a gun, but full like bullets, freely you shoot out. I be the real supernatural, so check it out. I was conceived in the center of an inferno. The ninth month, I slipped out my mom's vaginal cavity. Now I'm surrounded by creeps and freaks. Had to watch my back in the New York streets. Fly like an aeroplane, more powerful than the engine of an A-train. Won't let it stress my brain. You know the fame that has been sold and bought in a single pound. I leapt the criminal court, walk through the desert and don't perspire. Touch the microphone, the whole joint catches a fire. Use this opportunity to call a devil a liar. And I won't stop flipping shit until I'm forced to retire, because that's how I'm living, living.
That's confusion, niggas losing hard men and trying to win it. Now you know, goddamn,
I can't stroke all night and not bust a nut. Swim through a sea of razor blades and not get cut. When I do my thing, I aim for the gut and despise those nasty guys that hit shit in the butt. Blaze like strips, even back in the days when I bag shit up like trays. Nowadays, I bag them up like dimes, and not even the devil can stop me, cause his matter undermined. I'm fucking up your mind like a hallucinogen.
Are you hot, Lord?
I heat it up like halogen. Burn and tease their children and their children's children. Reverse polarity and make your girls hell heaven. More intelligent than MacGyver, quick to pull off on a stunt like an Indy car driver. Thoughts too intense, brainwaves cut like barbed wire. Some sons of reverence, sucker MCs call me sire. Push for my mental forces to crush your fortress. Signals of distress, your whole scars put to death. Bring your white Superman and I rip that fucking ass off his chest, cause that's just how I'm living.
Now you know, goddamn. That's confusion, niggas losing hard men and trying to win it. Now you know, goddamn. That's confusion, niggas losing hard men and trying to win it. Now you know, goddamn. That's confusion, niggas losing hard men and trying to win it. Now you know, goddamn. That's confusion, niggas losing.
I dedicate my life to taking snake heads. I break on the beats like scissors break on my dreads. Instead of eating beats and living savagely, I aspire to excel to the highest degree of living. Now how you living like a turkey on Thanksgiving? Me, I keep it tight and lock it down like a virgin pop. From crack rocks to suburban blocks, I'm hot. Don't forget or have you forgot that I'm a surgeon. Once outran the jaguar, slept in a lion's den and escaped without a scar. Close my eyes and commence to star travel. Fretless don't have a job, cause I turn hard rocks to gravel. Babble, never control the weather like a few gems back. Whatever's clever, even the rudeness of rude can't test, cause I'm protected with the breastplate of righteousness. And that's just how I'm living.
Now you know, goddamn. That's confusion, niggas losing by the minute trying to win it. Now you know, goddamn. That's confusion, niggas losing by the minute trying to win it. Now you know, goddamn.
Try the noise, city boys.
rational. Und gegen Leid und Schmerzen in der Welt gibt er Ratio Fahnen.
Thank you. forgotten. You didn't even try. The chain around your neck will strangle you soon. All that you still come to see, the gum that you chew will suffocate you. Secrets you should.
I'm curious, Lieutenant. What does it mean, groovy?
There is only one way to find out. Listen to Space Station 5 on 97.1 FM.
Das kann ich tun, diesen Augen zu gefallen. Just again, öffne dich. Erste Lektion, durchgeht wohl die Lektion. 24 Stunden, die Uschi, die dann sehe, schieße. Was kann ich tun, diesen Augen zu gefallen? Beauty Game, öffne dich. Meine Solutionen für deine Problemzonen. Abgassern, Emotionen, Boden lösen. Beobola, Daylight Controller. Liposomen, Liquid Eyeliner. Lippen, Lippenstift, Kuss, Mund, Glitzer und Konturenstift. Maske, Aloe Vera, Tourmaker, Vitamina, Ultravolumen, Mascara. Was kann ich tun, diesen Augen zu gefallen? Beauty Game, öffne dich, die Welt ist
thank you. 발달소의 강화하고 합의를 붙여나
hacking is not allowed in the Netherlands. Hack, hack, hack. Hacking is not allowed in the Netherlands. That you don't have to commit crimes to have a nice time.
Obviously, you're listening to the Happiness Channel.
So, if you're still listening at the in the wee hours of the morning, I don't think we will have too many listeners, just in case we have, I want to present another radio play. Yesterday it was War of the Worlds, conducted by Orson Welles, and tonight it's some classic I think you all know. Manuel, can you look? Yeah. I'm going to play a few episodes of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by the late Douglas Adams, and you probably know that this was a radio show before it became a series of books, and so this is a real classic, and I think we're going to play 4 episodes until we're all sick and tired of it. So enjoy. Welcher MP3 ist das denn?
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams, starring Peter Jones as the book, with Simon Jones and Jeffrey McGiven. This is the story of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, perhaps the most remarkable, certainly the most successful book ever to come out of the great publishing corporations of Ursa Minor. More popular than the Celestial Home Care Omnibus, better selling than 53 More Things to Do in Zero Gravity, and more controversial than Ulan Khaloufid's trilogy of philosophical blockbusters, Where God Went Wrong, Some More of God's Greatest Mistakes, and Who Is This God Person Anyway? And in many of the more relaxed civilizations on the outer eastern rim of the galaxy, the Hitchhiker's Guide has already supplanted the great Encyclopedia Galactica as the standard repository of all knowledge and wisdom, because although it has many omissions, contains much that is apocryphal, or at least wildly inaccurate, it scores over the older, more pedestrian work in 2 important ways. First, it is slightly cheaper, and second, it has the words "Don't Panic" inscribed in large, friendly letters on the cover. To tell the story of the book, it's best to tell the story of some of the minds behind it. A human, from the planet Earth, was one of them, though as our story opens, he no more knows his destiny than a tea leaf knows the history of the East India Company. His name is Arthur Dent. He is a 6-foot-tall ape descendant, and someone is trying to drive a bypass through his home.
Come off it, Mr. Dent. You can't win, you know. Look, it's no point in lying down in the path of progress.
I've gone off the idea of progress. It's overrated.
But you must realise that you can't lie in front of the bulldozers indefinitely.
I'm game. We'll see who rusts first.
I'm afraid you're going to have to accept it. This bypass has got to be built, and it is going to be built. Nothing you can say or do...
Why has it got to be built?
What do you mean, why has it got to be built? It is a bypass. You've got to build bypasses.
Didn't anyone consider the alternative?
There aren't any alternatives, but you are quite entitled to make any suggestions or protests at the appropriate time.
Appropriate time?
Yes.
The first I knew about it was when a workman arrived at the door yesterday.
Oh.
I asked him if he'd come to clean the windows, and he said he'd come to demolish the house. He didn't tell me straight away, of course. Oh, no. First he wiped a couple of windows and charged me a fiver. Then he told me...
But, Mr. Dent, the plans have been available in the planning office for the last 9 months.
Yes. I went round to find them yesterday afternoon. You hadn't exactly gone out of your way to call much attention to them, had you? I mean, like actually telling anybody or anything.
The plans were on display.
And how many average members of the public are in the habit of casually dropping around at the local planning office of an evening? It's not exactly a noted social venue, is it? And even if you had popped in on the off chance that some raving bureaucrat wanted to knock your house down, the plans weren't immediately obvious to the eye, were they?
That depends where you were looking.
I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights had probably gone.
So had the stairs.
Well, you found the notice, didn't you?
Yes. It was on display in the bottom of a locked filing cabinet, stuck in a disused lavatory with a sign on the door saying, "Beware of the leopard." Ever thought of going into advertising?
It's not as if it's a particularly nice house, anyway.
I happen rather to like it.
Mr. Dent!
Yes, hello.
Have you any idea how much damage that bulldozer would suffer if I just let it roll straight over you?
How much?
None at all.
By a strange coincidence, none at all is exactly how much suspicion the ape descendant Arthur Dent had that one of his closest friends was not descended from an ape, but was in fact from a small planet somewhere in the vicinity of Betelgeuse. Arthur Dent's failure to suspect this reflects the care with which his friend blended himself into human society, after a fairly shaky start. When he first arrived 15 years ago, the minimal research he had done suggested to him that the name Ford Prefect would be nicely and conspicuous. He will enter our story in 35 seconds and say, "Hello, Arthur." The ape descendant will greet him in return, but in deference to a million years of evolution, he will not attempt to pick fleas off him. Earthmen are not proud of their ancestors and never invite them round to dinner.
Hello, Arthur.
Ford, hi, how are you?
Fine, look, are you busy?
Well, I've just got this bulldozer to lie in front of, otherwise, no, not especially.
There's a pub down the road. Let's have a drink and we can talk.
Don't you understand?
Mr. Dent, we're waiting!
Ford, that man wants to knock my house down.
Well, he can do it whilst you're away, can't he?
But I don't want him to.
Well, just ask him to wait till you get back.
Ford!
Arthur! Will you please just listen to me? I'm not fooling. I've got to tell you the most important thing you've ever heard. I've got to tell you now, and I've got to tell you in that pub there.
Why?
Because you're going to need a very stiff drink. Now, just trust me.
I'll see what I can do. It had better be good. Hello, Mr. Prosser?
Oh, yes, Mr. Dent. Have you come to your senses yet?
Well, can we just assume for a moment that I haven't?
Well?
And that I'm going to be staying put here till you go away.
So?
So you're going to be standing around all day doing nothing.
Could be.
Well, if you're resigned to standing around doing nothing all day, you don't actually need me here all the time, do you?
No. Not as such.
So if you can just take it as read that I'm actually here, I could just slip off down to the pub for half an hour. How does that sound?
That sounds, oh, very reasonable, I think, Mr. Dent. I'm sure we don't actually need you there for the whole time. We can just hold up our end of the confrontation.
And if you want to pop off for a bit later on, I can always cover for you in return.
Oh, thank you. Yes, yes, oh, that'll be fine. Yes, very kind of you, Mr. Dent, very kind.
And, of course, it goes without saying that you don't try and knock my house over while I'm away.
Oh, what? Good Lord! No, Mr. Dent!
Do you think we can trust him?
Myself, I'd trust him to the end of the earth.
Yes, but how far's that?
About 12 minutes away. Come on, I need a drink.
By drink, Ford Prefect meant alcohol. The Encyclopaedia Galactica describes alcohol as a colourless, volatile liquid formed by the fermentation of sugars, and also notes its intoxicating effect on certain carbon-based life forms. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy also mentions alcohol. It says that the best drink in existence is the Pan-Galactic Gargle Blaster, the effect of which is like having your brain smashed out with a slice of lemon wrapped round a large gold brick. The guide also tells you on which planets the best pan-galactic gargle blasters are mixed, how much you can expect to pay for one, and what voluntary organizations exist to help you rehabilitate.
6 pints of bitter, and quickly, please, the world's about to end.
Oh, yes, sir. Nice weather for it. Want to watch the match this afternoon, sir?
No point.
Foregone conclusion, you reckon, sir? Arsenal without a chance?
No, it's just that the world's going to end.
Oh, yes, sir, you say. Lucky escape for Arsenal if it did.
No, not really.
There you are, sir. 6 points.
Keep the change.
What, from a fiver? Thank you, sir.
You've got 10 minutes left to spend it.
Ford, would you please tell me what the hell is going on?
Drink up. You've got 3 pints to get through.
Three at lunchtime?
Time is an illusion. Lunchtime doubly so. Oh,
very deep. You should send that into the Reader's Digest. They've got a page for people like you.
Drink up?
Why 3 pints?
Muscle relaxant. You'll need it.
Did I do something wrong today, or has the world always been like this, and I've been too wrapped up in myself to notice?
All right, I'll try to explain. How long have we known each other, Arthur?
Oh, 5 years, maybe 6. Most of it seemed to make some kind of sense at the time.
All right. How would you react if I said that I'm not from Guildford after all, but from a small planet somewhere in the vicinity of Betelgeuse?
I don't know. Why, do you think it's the sort of thing you're likely to say?
Drink up, the world's about to end.
This must be Thursday. I never could get the hang of Thursdays.
On this particular Thursday, something was moving quietly through the ionosphere miles above the surface of the planet. But few people on the surface of the planet were aware of it. One of the 6,000 million people who hadn't glanced into the ionosphere recently was called Lady Cynthia Fitzmilton. She was, at that moment, standing in front of Arthur Dent's house in Cottington. Many of those listening to her speech would probably have experienced great satisfaction to know that in 4 minutes' time she would evaporate into a whiff of hydrogen, ozone and carbon monoxide. However, when the moment came, they would hardly notice because they would be too busy evaporating themselves.
I have been asked to come here to say a few words to mark the beginning of work on the very splendid and worthwhile New Bedingford Bypass.
Get off!
And I must say immediately what a great honor and a great privilege I think it must be for you, the people of Cottington, to have this gleaming new motorway going through your cruddy little village. I'm sorry, your little country village of cruddy Cottington. How proud you must feel at this moment to know that your obscure and unsung hamlet will now arise reborn as the very splendid and worthwhile Cottington Service Station. Providing welcome refreshment and sanitary relief for every weary traveller on his way.
Why don't you push out in country so fast?
And for myself, it gives me great pleasure to take this bottle of very splendid and worthwhile champagne and break it against the noble prow of this very splendid and worthwhile yellow bulldozer.
They haven't started yet.
Oh, good. It's probably just your house being knocked down.
What? It hardly makes any difference at this stage.
My God, it is! What the hell are they doing? We had an agreement.
Let them have their fun.
Damn you and your fairy stories. They're smashing up my home. Stop, you vandals! You homebreakers! You half-faced Visigoths! Stop!
Arthur, come back! It's pointless. Hell, I'd better go after him. Barman, quickly, can you just give me 4 packets of peanuts?
Certainly, sir. There you are. 28 pence.
Keep the change.
Are you serious, sir? I mean, do you really think the world's going to end this afternoon?
Yes, in just over 1 minute and 35 seconds.
Well, isn't there anything we can do?
No, nothing.
Well, I always thought we meant to lie down or put a paper bag over our head or something.
If you like, yes.
Well, without help?
No. Excuse me, I've got to find my friend.
All of them. Last orders, please.
You pinstripe barbarians, I'll sue the council for every penny it's got. I'll have you hung and drawn and quartered and whipped and boiled. And then I'll chop you up into little bits until you add it up.
Arthur, don't bother. There isn't time. Get over here. There's only 10 seconds left.
And then I'll do it some more. And when I finish, I'll take all the little bits and I'll jump on them. And I'll carry on jumping on them until I get blisters. Or I can think of something even more unpleasant to do. And then I'll...
What the hell's that?
Arthur, quick, over here.
But what the hell is it?
It's a fleet of flying saucers. What do you think it is? Quick, you've got to get hold of this rock.
What do you mean, flying saucers?
Just that. It's a Vogon Constructor fleet.
A what?
A Vogon Constructor fleet. I picked up news of their arrival a few hours ago on my sub-ether radio.
Ford, I don't think I can cope with any more of this. I think I'll just go and have a little lie down somewhere.
No, just stay here. Keep calm. And just take hold of this...
People of Earth, your attention, please. This is Prosthetic Vogon Jokes of the Galactic Hyperspace Planning Council. As you will no doubt be aware, the plans for the development of the outlying regions of the western spiral arm of the galaxy require the building of a hyperspace express route through your star system. And, regrettably, your planet is one of those scheduled for demolition. The process will take slightly less than 2 of your Earth minutes. Thank you very much. There's no point in acting all surprised about it. All the planning charts and demolition orders have been on display at your local planning department in Alpha Centauri for 50 of your Earth years, so you've had plenty of time to lodge any formal complaints, but it's far too late to start making a fuss about it now. What do you mean you've never been to Alpha Centauri? Oh, for heaven's sake, mankind, it's only 4 light years away, you know. I'm sorry, but if you can't be bothered to take an interest in local affairs, that's your own lookout. Energize the demolition beams... God, I don't know. I'm pathetic, bloody planet. I've no sympathy at all.
What? If you've never been through a matter transference beam before, you've probably lost some salt and protein. The bill you had should have cushioned your system a bit. How are you feeling?
Like a military academy. Bits of me keep on passing out. If I asked you where the hell we were, would I regret it?
We're safe.
Oh, good.
We're in a small galley cabin in one of the spaceships of the Vogon Constructor Fleet.
Ah, this is obviously some strange usage of the word safe that I wasn't previously aware of.
I'll have a look for the light.
All right. How did we get here?
We hitched a lift.
Excuse me, are you trying to tell me that we just stuck out our thumbs and some bug-eyed monster stuck his head out and said, "Hi, fellas, hop right in. I can take you as far as the Basingstoke roundabout."
Well, the thumb's an electronic sub-ether device. The roundabout's at Barnard Star, 6 light-years away. But otherwise, that's more or less right.
And the bug-eyed monster?
It's green, yes.
Fine. When can I go home?
You can't. Ah, I found the light.
Good grief. Is this really the interior of a flying saucer?
It certainly is. What do you think?
Well, it's a bit squalid, isn't it?
What did you expect?
Well, I don't know. Gleaming control panels, flashing lights, computer screens. Not old mattresses.
These are the Gentressi sleeping quarters.
I thought you said they were called Vogons or something.
The Vogons run the ship. The Gentressi are the cooks. They let us on board.
I'm confused.
Here. Have a look at this.
What is it?
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's a sort of electronic book. It'll tell you everything you want to know. That's its job.
I like the cover. Don't panic. It's the first helpful or intelligible thing anybody's said to me all day.
That's why it sells so well. Here, press this button and the screen will give you the index. You've got several million entries, so fast wind through the index to V. There you are, Vogon Constructor Fleets. Enter that code on the tabulator and read what it says.
Vogon Constructor Fleets. Here is what to do if you want to get a lift from a Vogon. Forget it. They're one of the most unpleasant races in the galaxy. Not actually evil, but bad-tempered, bureaucratic, officious, and callous. They wouldn't even lift a finger to save their own grandmothers from the ravenous bug-bladder beast of Tral. Without orders signed in triplicate, sent in, sent back, queried, lost, found, subjected to public inquiry, lost again, and finally buried in soft peat for 3 months and recycled as firelighters. The best way to get a drink out of a Vogon is stick your finger down his throat, and the best way to irritate him is to feed his grandmother to the ravenous bug-bladder beast of Tral.
What a strange book. How did we get a lift, then?
Well, that's the point. It's out of date now. I'm doing the field research for the new revised edition of the guide.
So, for instance, I will have to include a revision pointing out that since the Vogons have made so much money being professionally unpleasant, they can now afford to employ Dentrassi cooks, which gives us a rather useful little loophole.
Who are the Dentrassi?
The best cooks and the best drinks mixers, and they don't give a wet slap about anything else. And they will always help hitchhikers on board, partly because they like the company, but mostly because it annoys the Vogons, which is exactly the sort of thing you need to know if you're an impoverished hitchhiker trying to see the marvels of the galaxy for less than 30 Altarian dollars a day. And that's my job. Fun, isn't it?
It's amazing.
Unfortunately, I got stuck on the Earth for rather longer than I intended. I came for a week and was stranded for 15 years.
But how did you get there in the first place?
Oh, easy. I got a lift with a teaser. You don't know what a teaser is. I'll tell you. Teasers are usually rich kids with nothing to do. They cruise around looking for planets which haven't made interstellar contact yet and buzz them.
Buzz them?
Yes, they find some isolated spot with very few people around, then land right by some poor unsuspecting soul whom no one's ever going to believe, and then strut up and down in front of him wearing silly antennae on their head and making beep-beep noises. Rather childish, really.
Ford, I don't know if this sounds like a silly question, but what am I doing here?
Well, you know that. I rescued you from the Earth.
And what has happened to the Earth?
It's been disintegrated.
Has it?
Yes, it just boiled away into space.
Look, I'm a bit upset about that.
Yes, I can understand.
So, what do I do?
You come along with me and enjoy yourself. You'll need to have this fish in your ear.
I beg your pardon? What the devil's that?
Listen, am I being caught?
What?
It's the Vogon captain making an announcement on the PA.
But I can't speak Vogon.
You don't need to. Just put the fish in your ear. Come on, it's only a little one.
Time. Message repeat. This is your captain speaking, so stop whatever you're doing and pay attention. First of all, I see from our instruments that we have a couple of hitchhikers aboard our ship. Hello, wherever you are. I just want to make it totally clear that you are not at all welcome. I worked hard to get where I am today, but I didn't become captain of a Vogon construction ship simply so that I could turn it into a taxi service for degenerate freeloaders. I have sent out a search party, and as soon as they find you, I will put you off the ship. If you're very lucky, I might read you some of my poetry first. Secondly, we are about to jump into hyperspace for the journey to Barnard's Star. On arrival, we will stay in dock for a 72-hour refit, and no one's to leave the ship during that time. I repeat, all planet leave is cancelled. I've just had an unhappy love affair, so I don't see why anyone else should have a good time. Message ends.
Charming, these Vogons. I wish I had a daughter so I could forbid her to marry one.
You wouldn't need to. They've got as much sex appeal as a road accident. And you'd better be prepared for the jump into hyperspace. It's unpleasantly like being drunk.
Well, what's so unpleasant about being drunk?
You ask a glass of water.
Ford?
Yes?
What's this fish doing in my ear?
Translating for you. Look under Babelfish in the book.
What's happening?
We're going to hyperspace.
I'll never be called to return for you dead.
The babelfish is small, yellow, leech-like, and probably the oddest thing in the universe. It feeds on brainwave energy, absorbing all unconscious frequencies and then excreting telepathically a matrix formed from the conscious frequencies and nerve signals picked up from the speech centers of the brain. The practical upshot of which is that if you stick one in your ear, you can instantly understand anything said to you in any form of language. The speech you hear decodes the brainwave matrix. Now, it is such a bizarrely improbable coincidence that anything so mind-bogglingly useful could evolve purely by chance that some thinkers have chosen to see it as a final clinching proof of the non-existence of God. The argument goes something like this. I refuse to prove that I exist, says God. For proof denies faith, and without faith I'm nothing. But, said man, the babelfish is a dead giveaway, isn't it? It proves you exist, and so therefore you don't. QED. Oh dear, says God, I hadn't thought of that, and promptly vanishes in a puff of logic. Oh, that was easy, says man, and for an encore he proves that black is white and gets killed on the next zebra crossing. Most leading theologians claim that this argument is a load of dingo's kidneys, but that didn't stop Ulan Kalufid making a small fortune when he used it as the central theme of his best-selling book, Well, That About Wraps It Up for God. Meanwhile, the poor babelfish, by effectively removing all barriers to communication between different cultures and races, has caused more and bloodier wars than anything else in the history of creation.
What an extraordinary book.
Help me write the new edition.
No, I want to go back to Earth again, I'm afraid. Or its nearest equivalent.
You're turning down 100 billion new worlds to explore.
Did you get much useful material on Earth?
I was able to extend the entry, yes.
Now, let's see what it says in this edition, then.
Okay.
Let's see. E-Earth. Tap out the code. There's the page. It doesn't seem to have an entry.
Yes, it does. See, right there at the bottom of the screen, just under Eccentrica Galumbis, the triple-breasted whore of Eroticon 6.
What, there? Oh, yes.
Harmless.
Harmless? Is that all it's got to say? One word? Harmless? What the hell's that supposed to mean?
Well, there are 100 billion stars in the galaxy and a limited amount of space in the book. And no one knew much about the Earth, of course.
Well, I hope you've managed to rectify that a little.
Yes, I transmitted a new entry off to the editor. He had to trim it a bit, but it's still an improvement.
What does it say now?
Mostly harmless.
Mostly harmless?
Well, that's the way it is. We're on a different scale now.
Okay, Ford, I'm with you. I'm bloody well coming with you. Where are we now?
Not far from Barnard's Star. It's a beautiful place, and a sort of hyperspace junction. You can get virtually anywhere from there. That is assuming that we actually get there.
What's that?
Well, if we're lucky, it's just the Vogons come to throw us into space.
And if we're unlucky?
If we're unlucky, the captain might want to read us some of his poetry first.
Vogon poetry is, of course, the third worst in the universe. The second worst is that of the Asgoths of Kriya. During a recitation by their poet master Grunthus the Flatulent of his poem Ode to a Small Lump of Green Putty I Found in My Armpit One Midsummer Morning, four of his audience died of internal hemorrhaging, and the president of the Midgalactic Arts Nobbling Council survived by gnawing one of his own legs off. Grunthus is reported to have been disappointed by the poem's reception, and was about to embark on a reading of his 12-book epic entitled My Favorite Bathtime Gurgles, when his own major intestine, in a desperate attempt to save humanity, leapt straight up through his neck and throttled his brain. The very worst poetry of all perished along with its creator, Paul Neil Milne Johnston of Redbridge, in the destruction of the planet Earth. Vogon poetry is mild by comparison, and when the Vogon captain began to read, it provoked this reaction from Ford Prefect. And this from Arthur Dent.
Frail, grunt, buckling, my maturations are to me as girdled gravel botches of a learning bee. Grunt, I implore thee, my booty turning throat, and hopelessly dangle me with pinky finger wordles, for otherwise I will rend thee in the dog wards with my blurred crunch from sea by dirt. Sir, earthlings, I present you with a simple choice. I was going to throw you straight out of the empty blackness of space to die horribly and slowly, but there is one way, one simple way, in which you may save yourselves. Now think very carefully. If you hold your very lives in your hands, now choose! Either die in the vacuum of space, or... Tell me how good you thought my poem was.
Will our heroes survive this terrible ordeal? Can they win through with their integrity unscathed? Can they escape without completely compromising their honor and artistic judgment? Tune in next week for the next exciting installment of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. In that episode of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Peter Jones starred as the book, Simon Jones was Arthur Dent, and Geoffrey McGiven, Ford Prefect. Bill Wallace was Prosser and the Vogon Captain, with Joe Kendall as Lady Cynthia Fitzmelton and David Goodison as the barman. The program was written by Douglas Adams and produced by Simon Brett, with the assistance of Paddy Kingsland at the Radiophonic Workshop and a small, furry creature from the Crab Nebula. We'll be right back.
geometry was really particularly effective in the metaphysical form.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams, starring Peter Jones as The Book. Far out in the uncharted backwaters of the unfashionable end of the western spiral arm of the galaxy lies a small, unregarded yellow sun. Orbiting this at a distance of roughly 90 million miles is an utterly insignificant little blue-green planet whose ape-descended life forms are so amazingly primitive that they still think digital watches are a pretty neat idea. This planet has, or had, a problem, which was this. Most of the people living on it were unhappy for pretty much of the time. Many solutions were suggested for this problem, but most of these were largely concerned with the movements of small green pieces of paper, which is odd because on the whole, it wasn't the small green pieces of paper that were unhappy. And so the problem remained, and lots of the people were mean, and most of them were miserable, even the ones with digital watches. Many were increasingly of the opinion that they'd all made a big mistake in coming down from the trees in the first place. And some said that even the trees had been a bad move and that no one should ever have left the oceans. And then one day, nearly 2,000 years after one man had been nailed to a tree for saying how great it would be to be nice to people for a change, a girl, sitting on her own in a small cafe in Rickmansworth, suddenly realized what it was that had been going wrong all this time, and she finally knew how the world could be made a good and happy place. This time, it was right, it would work, and no one would have to get nailed to anything. Sadly, however, before she could get to a phone to tell anyone, the Earth was unexpectedly demolished to make way for a new hyperspace bypass, and so the idea was lost forever. Meanwhile, Arthur Dent has escaped from the Earth in the company of a friend of his, who has unexpectedly turned out to be from a small planet somewhere in the vicinity of Betelgeuse. His name is Ford Prefect, for reasons which are unlikely to become clear again at the moment, and they are both in dead trouble with the captain of a Vogon spaceship.
Sir, Earthlings, I present you with a simple choice. Think carefully, for you hold your very lives in your hands. Now choose. I die in the vacuum of space, or... Tell me how good you thought my poem was.
I liked it.
Good.
Oh, yes, I thought that some of the metaphysical imagery was particularly effective.
Yes?
Oh, and, interesting rhythmic devices, too, which seem to counterpoint the...
Counterpoint the surrealism of the underlying metaphor of the,
humanity of the,
Vagonity.
What?
Vagonity.
Oh, Vagonity, sorry. Of the poet's compassionate soul, which contrives through the medium of the verse structures to sublimate this, transcend that, and come to terms with the fundamental dichotomies of the other, and one is left with a profound and vivid insight into
whatever it was
the poem was about.
Done, Arthur. That was very good.
So what you're saying is that I'm right, Beatrice, because underneath my mean, callous, heartless exterior, I really just want to be loved. Is that right?
Well, I mean, yes.
Yes.
Don't we all, deep down, you know?
No, you're completely wrong. I just write poetry to throw my mean, callous, heartless exterior into sharp relief. I'm going to say you want the ship anyway. Go away! Take the prisoners, number 3 airlock, and throw them out.
You can't throw us off into deep space. We're trying to write a book.
I don't want to die now. I've still got a headache. I don't want to go to heaven with a headache. I'd be all cross and wouldn't enjoy it.
Oh, you can't do this.
Why not, you puny creature?
Well, why not? Why not? Doesn't have to be a reason for everything. Why don't you just let us go on a mad impulse? Go on.
Counterpoint the surrealism of the underlying metaphor. Death's too good for them.
No! Let go of me, you brute!
don't you worry. I'll think of something.
Resistance is useless.
I woke up this morning and thought I'd have a nice, relaxed day. Do a bit of reading, brush the dog.
I know.
Just after 4 in the afternoon, and I'm already being thrown out of an alien spaceship 5 light years from the smoking remains of the Earth.
All right, just stop panicking.
Who said anything about panicking? This is still just the culture shock.
Arthur, you're getting hysterical. Shut up.
Resistance is useless.
You can shut up as well.
Resistance is useless.
Now, give it a rest. Do you really enjoy this sort of thing?
Resistance is... What do you mean?
I mean, does it give you a full, satisfying life? Stomping around, shouting, pushing people out of spaceships?
Well, the answer's good.
They have to be.
But now you come to mention it, I suppose most of the actual meetings are pretty lousy. Except some of the shouting I quite like. Resistance!
Yeah, sure, yes, you're good at that, I can tell. But if it's mostly lousy, then why do you do it? What is it? The girls? The leather? The machismo?
I don't know. I think I've... just sort of do it, really.
There, Arthur, you think you've got problems.
Yes, this guy's still half-throttling me.
Yeah, but try and understand his problem.
Oh, right, so, what's the alternative?
Well, stop doing it, of course.
Well, doesn't sound that great to me.
Well, wait a minute, that's just the start. There's more to it than that, you see.
I think it's all the same to you. I'd better just get you both shoved into this airlock and then go get on with some other bits of shouting I've got to do.
I mean, come on, I mean, now look.
Thanks for taking an interest. Bye now.
No, don't do it.
No, listen, there's a whole world you don't know anything about. I mean, here, how about this? Da-da-da-dum. I mean, doesn't that stir anything in you?
Bye. I'll mention what you said to my aunt.
Potentially bright lad, I thought.
We're trapped now, aren't we?
Yes, we're trapped.
Well, didn't you think of anything?
Oh, yes.
Yes?
But unfortunately, rather involved being on the other side of the airtight hatchway, they've just sealed behind us.
So what happens next?
The hatchway in front of us will open automatically in a moment, and we'll shoot out into deep space and asphyxiate in about 30 seconds.
So this is it? We're going to die?
Yes. Except... no. Wait a minute. What's this switch?
What? Where?
No, I was only fooling. We are going to die after all.
You know, it's at times like this when I'm trapped in a Vogon airlock with a man from Beetlejuice and about to die of asphyxiation in deep space that I really wish I'd listened to what my mother told me when I was young.
Why? What did she show you?
I don't know. I didn't listen.
Terrific.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is a truly remarkable book. The introduction starts like this. Space, it says, is big, really big. You just won't believe how vastly, hugely, mind-bogglingly big it is. I mean, you may think it's a long way down the street to the chemist, but that's just peanuts to space. Listen! And so on. After a while, the style settles down a bit, and it starts telling you things you actually need to know, like the fact that the fabulously beautiful planet Bethselamine is now so worried about the cumulative erosion caused by 10 million visiting tourists a year that any net imbalance between the amount you eat and the amount you excrete whilst on the planet is surgically removed from your body weight when you leave. So every time you go to the lavatory there, it's vitally important to get a receipt. In the entry in which it talks about dying of asphyxiation 30 seconds after being thrown out of a spaceship, it goes on to say that what with space being the size it is, the chances of being picked up by another craft within those seconds are 2 to the power of 267,709 to 1 against, which, by a staggering coincidence, was also the telephone number of an Islington flat where Arthur once went to a very good party and met a very nice girl whom he entirely failed to get off with. Though the planet Earth, the Islington flat and the telephone have all now been demolished, it is comforting to reflect that they are in some small way commemorated by the fact that 29 seconds later, Ford and Arthur were in fact rescued.
There you are. I told you. I think of something.
Oh, sure.
Bright idea of mine. To find a passing spaceship and...
get rescued by.
Oh, come on. The chances against it were astronomical.
Don't knock it. It worked. Now, where are we?
Well, I hardly like to say this, but it looks like the seafront at Southend.
God, I'm relieved to hear you say that.
Why?
Because I thought I must be going mad.
Perhaps we weren't rescued after all. Perhaps we died.
What's that meant to mean?
When I was young, I used to have this nightmare about dying. I used to lie awake at night, screaming. All my school friends went to heaven or hell, and I was sent to Southend.
Perhaps we'd better ask somebody what's going on. How about that man over there?
The one with the five heads crawling up the wall?
Yes.
Sir, excuse me. Me? You know, if this is Southend, there's something very odd about it.
You mean the way the sea stays steady as a rock and the buildings keep washing up and down? Yes, I thought that was odd.
2 to the power of 100,000 to 1 against and falling.
What is that?
It sounds like a measurement of probability. Hey, that couldn't mean... No.
What?
I'm not sure, but it means we definitely are on some kind of spaceship.
Southend seems to be melting away. Stars are swirling. A dust bowl. Snow. My legs are drifting off into the sunset. Hell, I left arms off too. How am I going to operate my digital watch now? Four,
you, 2 to the power of 75,000 to 1 against and falling.
Hey, who are you? Where are you? What's going on? And is there any way of stopping it?
Please relax. You are perfectly safe.
That's not the point. The point is that I am now a perfectly safe penguin, and my colleague here is rapidly running out of limbs.
All right, they've got them back now.
2 to the power of 50,000 to 1 against and falling.
Admittedly, they're longer than I usually like them, but...
Isn't there anything you feel you ought to be telling us?
Welcome to the Starship Heart of Gold. Please do not be alarmed by anything you see or hear around you. You are bound to feel some initial ill effects, as you've been rescued from certain death at an improbability level of 2 to the power of 267,709 to 1 against, possibly much higher. We are now cruising at a level of 2 to the power of 25,000 to 1 against and falling, and we will be restoring normality as soon as we are sure what is normal anyway. Thank you. 2 to the power of 20,000 to 1 against and falling.
Arthur, this is fantastic. We've been picked up by a ship with the new infinite improbability drive. This is really incredible, Arthur. What's happening?
Ford, there's an infinite number of monkeys outside who want to talk to us about this script for Hamlet they've worked out.
The infinite improbability drive is a wonderful new method of crossing interstellar distances in a few seconds without all that tedious mucking about in hyperspace. The principle of generating small amounts of finite improbability by simply hooking the logic circuits of a Bambolwini 57 submeson brain to an atomic vector plotter suspended in a strong Brownian motion producer, say a nice hot cup of tea, were of course well understood, and such generators were often used to break the ice at parties by making all the molecules in the hostess's undergarments simultaneously leap 1 foot to the left, in accordance with the theory of indeterminacy. Many respectable physicists said that they weren't going to stand for that sort of thing, partly because it was a debasement of science, but mostly because they didn't get invited to those sort of parties. Another thing they couldn't stand was the perpetual failure they encountered in trying to construct a machine which could generate the infinite improbability field needed to flip a spaceship between the furthest stars, and in the end, they grumpily announced that such a machine was virtually impossible. Then, one day, a student who had been left to sweep up the lab after a particularly unsuccessful party found himself reasoning this way. If such a machine is a virtual impossibility, then it must logically be a finite improbability. So all I have to do in order to make one is to work out exactly how improbable it is, then feed that figure into the finite improbability generator, give it a fresh cup of really hot tea, and then turn it on. He did this and was rather startled to discover that he'd managed to create the long-sought-after infinite improbability generator out of thin air. It startled him even more when, just after he was awarded the Galactic Institute's prize for extreme cleverness, he got lynched by a rampaging mob of respectable physicists who had finally realized that the one thing they really couldn't stand was a smart ass.
5 to 1 against him falling, 4 to 1 against him falling, 3 to 1,
2, 1, probability factor of 1 to 1, we have normality. I repeat, we have normality. Anything you still can't cope with is therefore your own problem. Please relax. You will be sent for soon.
Who are they, Trillium?
Oh, just a couple of guys we picked up in open space. Sector ZZ9, plural Z Alpha.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a very sweet thought, Trillium, but do you really think it's wise under the circumstances? I mean, here we are, on the run and everything. We've got the police of half the galaxy after us, and we stopped to pick up hitchhikers. Okay, so 10 out of 10 for style, but minus several million for good thinking, okay?
Zaphod, they were floating unprotected in open space. You didn't want them to die, did you?
Well, not as such, no, but...
Anyway, I didn't pick them up. The ship did it all by itself.
What?
Whilst we were in improbability drive.
That's incredible.
No, just very, very improbable. Look, don't worry about the aliens. They're just a couple of guys, I expect. I'll send the robot down to check them out. Hey, Marvin!
I think you ought to know I'm feeling very depressed.
God.
Well, here's something to occupy you and keep your mind off things.
It won't work. I have an exceptionally large mind.
Marvin...
All right, what do you want me to do?
Go down to number 2 entry bay and bring the 2 aliens up here under surveillance.
Just that?
Yes.
I won't enjoy it.
She's not asking you to enjoy it. Just do it, will you?
All right, I'll do it.
Yeah, good, great. Thank you.
I'm not getting you down at all, am I?
No, no, Marvin. That's just fine, really.
I wouldn't like to think I was getting you down.
No, don't worry about that. You just act as comes naturally and everything will be fine.
You're sure you don't mind?
No, no, it's all just part of life.
Life? Don't talk to me about life.
I don't think I can stand that robot much longer, Zaphod.
The Encyclopedia Galactica defines a robot as a mechanical apparatus designed to do the work of a man. The marketing division of the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation defines a robot as your plastic pal who's fun to be with. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy defines the marketing division of the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation as a bunch of mindless jerks who'll be the first against the wall when the revolution comes, with a footnote to the effect that the editors would welcome applications from anyone interested in taking over the post of robotics correspondent. Curiously enough, an edition of the Encyclopedia Galactica that fell through a time warp from 1,000 years in the future defined the marketing division of the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation as a bunch of mindless jerks who were the first against the wall when the revolution came.
I think this ship is brand new, Arthur.
How can you tell? Have you got some exotic device for measuring the age of metal?
No, I just found a sales brochure lying on the floor. The universe can be yours. Ah, and look, I was right. Sensational new breakthrough in improbability physics. As the ship's drive reaches infinite improbability, it passes through every conceivable point in every conceivable universe almost simultaneously. You select your own re-entry point. Be the envy of other major governments. This is big league stuff.
It looks a hell of a lot better than that dingy Bogon ship.
This is my idea of a spaceship. With gleaming white, flashing lights, everything.
What happens if I press this button?
I wouldn't.
Oh.
What happened?
A sign lit up saying, please do not press this button again.
They make a big thing of the ship's cybernetics. A new generation of Sirius Cybernetics Corporation robots and computers with the new GPP feature.
GPP? What's that?
It says Genuine People Personalities.
Sounds ghastly.
It is.
What?
Ghastly. It all is. Absolutely ghastly. Just don't even talk about it. Look at this door. All the doors in this spacecraft have a cheerful and sunny disposition. It is their pleasure to open for you and their satisfaction to close again with the knowledge of a job well done. Hateful, isn't it? Come on. I've been ordered to take you up to the bridge. Here I am, brain the size of a planet, and they tell me to take you up to the bridge. Call that job satisfaction, because I don't.
Excuse me, which government owns this ship?
You watch this door. It's about to open again. I can tell by the intolerable air of smugness it suddenly generates. Come on. Thank you, the marketing division of the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation. Let's build robots with genuine people personalities, they said. So they tried it out with me.
and the personality prototype. You can tell, can't you? I hate that door. I'm not going to resign, am I?
Which government owns this ship?
No government owns it. It has been stolen.
Stolen?
Stolen?
Who by?
Zaphod Beeblebrox.
Zaphod Beeblebrox?
Sorry, did I say something wrong? Pardon me for breathing, which I never do anyway, so I don't know why I bothered to say it. Oh, God, I'm so depressed. Here's another of those self-satisfied doors. Life. Don't talk to me about life.
No one even mentioned it.
Really? Zaphod Beeblebrox.
And news reports brought to you here on the Sub-Ether Wave Band, broadcasting around the galaxy around the clock. And we'll be saying a big hello to all intelligent life forms everywhere. And to everyone else out there, the secret is to bang the rocks together, guys. And of course, the big news story tonight is the sensational theft of the new Improbability Drive prototype ship by none other than Zaphod Beeblebrox. And the question everyone's asking is, has the Big Z finally flipped? Beeblebrox, the man who invented the pangalactic gargle blaster, ex-confidence trickster, part-time galactic president, once described by eccentric Columbus as the best bang since the big one, and recently voted the worst-dressed sentient being in the universe for the seventh time running. Has he got an answer this time? We asked his private brain care specialist, Gag Helfand.
Well, look, Zaphod's just this guy, you know?
What do you turn it off for, Trillium?
Zaphod, I've just thought of something.
Yeah?
We picked those couple of guys up in... Zaphod, please take your hand off me. And the other one. Thank you. And the other one.
I grew that one specially for you, Trillium, you know that? Took me 6 months, but it was worth every minute.
We picked them up in sector ZZ9, plural Z Alpha. Doesn't that mean anything to you?
On the whole, no.
Well, it's where you originally picked me up. Let me show it to you on the screen. Right there.
Hey, right. I don't believe it. How the hell did we come to be there?
Improbability drive. We passed through every point in the universe. You know that.
Yeah, but picking them up there is just too strange a coincidence. Ooh. I want to work this out. Computer?
Hi there. I want you to know that whatever your problem, I am here to help you solve it.
Look, I think I'll just use a piece of paper.
Sure thing. I understand. If you ever need...
Shut up.
Okay.
Trillium, listen. The ship picked them up all by itself, right?
Right.
Right. So, that already gives us a high improbability factor. Mm-hmm. It picked them up in that particular space sector, which gives us another high improbability factor. Mm-hmm. Plus, they were not wearing spacesuits, so we picked them up during a crucial 30-second period.
I've got a note for that factor here.
Put it all together, and we have a total improbability of... Yeah, well, it's pretty vast, but it's not infinite. At what point did we actually pick them up?
At infinite improbability levels.
Which leaves us a very large improbability gap still to be filled. Look, they're on the way up here now, aren't they? Mm-hmm. With that bloody robot. Can we pick them up on any monitor?
I should think so.
And then, of course, I've got this terrible pain in all the diodes down my left side.
Is that so?
Oh, yes. I mean, I've asked for them to be replaced, but no one ever listens.
I can imagine.
Oh, God, I don't believe it.
Well, well, well. Zaphod Beeblebrox.
I don't believe it. This is just too amazing. Look, Trillium, I'll just handle this. Is anything wrong?
I think I'll just wait in the cabin. I'll be back in a minute.
Oh, this is going to be great. I'm going to be so unbelievably cool about it, it would flummox a vegan snow lizard. This is terrific. What real cool. Several million points out of 10 for style.
Well, you enjoy yourself, Zaphod. I don't see what's so great myself. I'll go and listen for the police on the Sub-Ether Wave Band.
Right. Which is the most nonchalant chair to be discovered working in it? Yeah. Okay.
I suppose you'll want to see the aliens now. Do you want me to sit in a corner and rust, or just fall apart where I'm standing?
Show them in, please, Marvin. Boys, hi. How are you? Glad you could drop in.
Zaphod, great to see you. You're looking well. The extra arm suits you. Nice ship you've stolen.
You mean you know this guy?
Know him? He's... Oh, Zaphod, this is a friend of mine, Arthur Dent. I saved him when his planet blew up.
Oh, sure. Hi, Arthur. Glad you could make it.
And Arthur, this is my...
We've met.
What?
Oh, have we?
Hey,
what do you mean you've met? This is Zaphod Beeblebrox from Beetlejuice 5, you know, not bloody Martin Smith from Croydon.
I don't care. We've met, haven't we, Zaphod? Or should I say, Phil?
What?
You'll have to remind me. I have a terrible memory for species.
It was at a party.
I rather doubt it.
Cool it, will you, Arthur?
A party 6 months ago. On Earth. England. London. Islington.
Oh, that party.
Zaphod, you don't mean to say you've been on that miserable little planet as well?
No, of course not. Well, I may have just dropped in briefly on my way somewhere.
What is all this, Arthur?
At this party, there was a girl. I'd had my eye on her for weeks. Beautiful, charming, devastatingly intelligent. Everything I'd been saving myself up for. And just when I'd finally managed to get her for myself for a few tender moments, this friend of yours barges up and says, "Hey, doll, is this guy boring you? Come and talk to me. I'm from a different planet." I never saw her again.
Zaphod?
Yes, he only had the two arms and the one head, and he called himself Phil, but...
But you must admit that he did actually turn out to be from a different planet, Arthur.
Good God, it's her! Tricia McMillan, what are you doing here?
Same as you, Arthur. I hitched a ride. After all, with a degree in maths and another in astrophysics, it was either that or back to the Dole Queue on Monday. Oh, I'm sorry I missed that Wednesday lunch date, but I was in a black hole all morning.
Oh, God. Ford, this is Trillian. Hi, Trillian, this is my semi-cousin Ford, who shares three of the same mothers as me. Hi. Trillian, is this sort of thing going to happen every time we use the infinite improbability drive?
Very probably, I'm afraid.
Zaphod Beeblebrox, this is a very large drink. Hi.
Will our heroes be able to enjoy a nice, relaxed evening at last? How will they cope with their new social roles? Will they survive the deadly missile attack, which is launched on them 3 minutes into the next episode? Find out in next week's exciting installment of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. In that episode of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Peter Jones was the book. Simon Jones played Arthur Dent, and Geoffrey McGiven, Ford Prefect. Stephen Moore was Marvin, Markwing Davy, Zaphod Beeblebrox, Susan Sheridan, Trillian, Bill Wallace, the Vogon Captain, and David Tate, the Vogon Guard and Computer. The programme was written by Douglas Adams and produced by Geoffrey Perkins with the assistance of the BBC Radiophonic Workshop. And it'll be repeated through a time warp on the Home Service in 1951.
Your shipboard computer. And I just want to mention here that we are now moving into orbit around the legendary planet of Magrathea. Sorry to interrupt your social evening. Have a good time.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams. Starring Peter Jones as The Book. Of ancient time, in the great and glorious days of the former galactic empire, life was wild, rich, and on the whole tax-free. In those days, spirits were brave, the stakes were high, men were real men, women were real women, and small fairy creatures from Alpha Centauri were real small fairy creatures from Alpha Centauri. And all dared to brave unknown terrors, to do mighty deeds, to boldly split infinitives that no man had split before. And thus was the empire forged. Many men, of course, became extremely rich. But this was perfectly natural and nothing to be ashamed of, because no one was really poor, at least no one worth speaking of. And for these extremely rich merchants, life eventually became rather dull, and it seemed that none of the worlds they settled on was entirely satisfactory. either the climate wasn't quite right in the later part of the afternoon, or the day was half an hour too long, or the sea was just the wrong shade of pink. And thus were created the conditions for a staggering new form of industry. Custom-made luxury planet building. The home of this industry was the planet Magrathea, where vast hyperspatial engineering works were constructed to suck matter through white holes in space and form it into dream planets, lovingly made to meet the exacting standards of the galaxy's richest men. And so successful was this venture that very soon Magrathea itself became the richest planet of all time, and the rest of the galaxy was reduced to abject poverty. And so the system broke down, the empire collapsed, and a long, sullen silence settled over the galaxy, disturbed only by the pen scratchings of scholars as they labored into the night over smug little treatises on the value of a planned political economy. In these enlightened days, of course, no one believed a word of it. Meanwhile, on Zaphod Beeblebrox's ship, deep in the darkness of the Horsehead Nebula...
I'm sorry, I just don't believe a word of it.
Listen to me, Ford. I found it. I swear, I found it.
Magrathea is a myth, a fairy story. It's what parents tell their kids about at night if they want them to grow up to become economists.
And we are currently in orbit around it.
Zaphod, I can't help what you may personally be in orbit around, but this ship...
Computer!
Hi there, this is Eddie, your shipboard computer, and I'm feeling just great, guys, and I know I'm just going to get a bundle of kicks out of any program you care to run through me.
Is this necessary?
Computer, tell us again what our current trajectory is.
A real pleasure, fella. We are currently in orbit at an altitude of 300 miles around the legendary planet of Magrathea. Golly.
Proving nothing. I wouldn't trust that computer to speak my weight.
I could do that for you, sure.
No, thank you.
I could even work out your personality problems to 10 decimal places if it'll help.
Zaphod, we should have dawn coming up any minute now on the planet, whatever it turns out to be.
Okay, let's just take a look at it. Computer.
Hi there, what can I do for you?
Just shut up and give us external vision on the monitors.
Tricia, I feel I may be missing the point of something.
Hmm? Well, Arthur, according to what Zaphod's told me, Magrathea is a legendary planet from way back, which no one seriously believes in. A bit like Atlantis, really. Oh, except that the legends say the Magratheans used to manufacture planets.
Hmm. Is there any tea on this spaceship?
Arthur Dent had basically assumed that he was the only native ape-descended Earthman to escape from the planet Earth when it was unexpectedly demolished to make way for a new hyperspace bypass, because his only companion, disconcertingly called Ford Prefect, had already revealed himself to be from a small planet somewhere in the vicinity of Betelgeuse, and not from Guildford after all. So when, against all conceivable probability, they were suddenly rescued from certain death in deep space by a stolen starship manned by two people, one of whom is Ford's semi-brother, the infamous Zaphod Beeblebrox, and the other of whom is Tricia McMillan, a rather nicely descended ape person that Arthur once met at a party in Islington, it could only be because the ship was powered by the new infinite improbability drive. Which, of course, it was. Slowly, majestically, this mighty starship begins its long descent towards the surface of the ancient planet, which might or might not be Magrathea.
Well, even supposing it is, which it isn't, what do you want with it anyway? I mean, I take it you're not here for the sheer industrial archaeology of it all. What is it you're after?
Well, it's partly the curiosity, partly a sense of adventure, but mostly I think it's the fame and the money.
It's just a dead planet.
The suspense is killing me.
Stress and nervous tension are now serious social problems in all parts of the galaxy, and it is in order that this situation should not be in any way exacerbated that the following facts will now be revealed in advance. The planet in question is, in fact, Magrathea. The deadly nuclear missile attack, shortly to be launched by an ancient automatic defense system, will merely result in the bruising of somebody's upper arm and the untimely creation and sudden demise of a bowl of petunias and an innocent sperm whale. In order that some sense of mystery should still be preserved, no revelation will yet be made concerning whose upper arm has been bruised. This fact may safely be made the subject of suspense, since it is of no significance whatsoever. Arthur's next question about the planet is very complex and difficult, and Zaphod's answer is wrong in every important respect.
Is it safe? Magrathea has been dead for 5 million years. Of course it's safe. Even the ghosts will have settled down in his family by now.
Hi there. millennial tape recording that's been broadcast at us.
This is a recorded alert, and I'm afraid we're all out at the moment. The Commercial Council of Magrathea... ...regrets that the entire planet is temporarily closed for business. Thank you. If you would like to leave your name and a planet where you can be contacted, kindly speak when you hear the tone.
They want to get rid of us. What do we do?
It's just a recording. Keep going. You got that computer?
I got it.
As soon as our business is resumed, announcements will be made in all fashionable magazines and color supplements, when our giants will once again be able to select from all that's best in contemporary geography. Meanwhile, we thank our clients for their kind interest and would ask them to leave now.
Well, I suppose we'd better be going then.
Shh! There's absolutely nothing to be worried about.
Then why is everyone so tense?
They're just interested. We keep going.
Gratifying that your enthusiasm for our planet continues unabated. And so we would like to assure you that the guided missiles currently converging with your ship are part of a special service we extend to all of our most enthusiastic clients. And the fully armed nuclear warheads are, of course, merely a courtesy detail. We look forward to your custom in future lives. Thank you.
Listen, if that's their sales pitch, what must it be like in the complaints department?
Hey, this is terrific! It means we really must be onto something if they're trying to kill us.
Terrific!
You mean, there is someone down there after all?
No, the whole defense system must be automatic, but the question is why?
But what are we going to do?
Just keep cool.
Is that all?
No, we're also going to take evasive action. Computer, what evasive action can we take?
None, I'm afraid, guys.
There's something...
There seems to be something jamming my guidance systems. Impact minus 30 seconds. Sorry, I didn't mean to do that. Please call me Eddie if it will help you relax.
Right, look, you've got to get manual control of this ship.
Can you fly it?
No, can you?
No.
Ford?
No.
Fine, we'll do it together.
I can't either.
I guess that. Computer, I want full manual control now.
You got it. Good luck, guys. Impact minus 20 seconds.
Okay, Ford, full retro thrust and 10 degrees starboard.
We're veering too fast.
I can't hold it. She's going into a spin.
It is, of course, more or less at this point that one of our heroes sustains a slight bruise to the upper arm. This should be emphasized because, as has already been revealed, they escape otherwise completely unharmed, and the deadly nuclear missiles do not eventually hit the ship. Our hero's safety is absolutely assured.
Impact minus 15 seconds, guys.
The rockets are still homing in. You can't shake them. We're going to die.
Shut that bloody computer up!
Zaphod, can we stabilize at X00547 by splitting our flight path tangentially across the summit vector of 9GX78 with a 5-degree inertial correction?
What? Yes, I expect so. Just do it. And God forgive you if you're any good for me.
Here we go.
Going
round Hyde Park Corner on a moped.
What?
Tell me later.
It's no good. The missiles are swinging round after us and gaining fast. We are quite definitely going to die.
Though your dreams be past and all. Impact minus 5 seconds.
I don't know why I'm using probability drive thing.
Oh, don't be silly. You can't do that.
Why not? There's nothing to lose at this stage.
Well, because... Does anyone know why Arthur can't turn on the improbability drive?
Impact minus 1 second. It's been great knowing you guys. God bless.
I said, does anyone know?
Just saying, there's a switch here, you see.
Where are we, Trillian?
Exactly where we were, I think.
Then what's happened to the missiles?
Well, according to this screen, they've just turned into a bowl of petunias and a very surprised-looking whale.
At an improbability factor of 8,767,128 to 1 again.
Did you think of that, Earthman?
Well, all I did was just...
That's very good thinking, you know that? You just saved our lives.
It was nothing, really.
Oh, was it? Oh, well, forget it. Oh. Okay, computer, take us into land.
Well, I say it was nothing. I mean, obviously it was something. I was just trying to say it's not worth making too much of a fuss about. I mean, just saving everybody's life, you know?
too much fuss about was the fact that against all probability, a sperm whale had suddenly been called into existence some miles above the surface of an alien planet. And since this is not a naturally tenable position for a whale, this innocent creature had very little time to come to terms with its identity as a whale before it had to come to terms with suddenly not being a whale anymore. This is what it thought as it fell.
Excuse me, who am I? Hello? Why am I here? What's my purpose in life? What do I mean by who am I?
Now calm down, get a grip now. Oh, this is an interesting sensation. What is it? It's a sort of yawning, tingling sensation in my... Well, I suppose I better start finding names for things if I want to make any headway and what for the sake of what I shall call an argument, I shall call the world. So let's call it my stomach. So, a yawning, tingling sensation in my stomach. Good. Oh, it's getting quite strong. Hey, what about this whistling, roaring sound? I'm going past what I'm suddenly going to call my head. That can be wind. Is that a good name? Oh, it'll do. Perhaps I can find a better name for it later when I find out what it's for. Because there certainly seems to be a hell of a lot of it. Hey, what's this thing? This, let's call it a tail. Yeah, tail. Yeah, I can really thrash it about pretty good, can't I? Wow! Wow! Hey, doesn't seem to achieve much, but I'll probably find out what it's for later on. Now, have I built up any coherent picture of things yet? No. Oh, wait, this is really exciting. So much to find out about, so much to look forward to. I'm quite dizzy with anticipation. Or is it the wind? Hey, there really is a lot of that now, isn't there? And wow, what's this thing suddenly coming toward me very fast? Very, very fast. So big and flat and wide. It is a big, wide-sounding word. Like, ow, 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 round, ground! That's it! Ground! I wonder if it'll be friends with me.
Curiously enough, the only thing that went through the mind of the bowl of petunias as it fell was, oh no, not again. Many people have speculated that if we knew exactly why the bowl of petunias had thought that, we should know a lot more about the nature of the universe than we do now. Meanwhile, the starship has landed on the surface of Megrathea, and Trillian is about to make one of the most important statements of her life. Its importance is not immediately recognized by her companions.
Hey, my white mice have escaped.
Oh, nuts to your white mice.
It is possible that Trillian's observation would have commanded greater attention had it been generally realized that human beings were only the third most intelligent life form on the planet Earth, instead of, as was generally thought by most independent observers, the second.
Okay, run atmospheric checks on the planet.
Are we taking this robot?
Don't feel you have to take any notice of me, please.
Oh, Marlin the paranoid android. Yeah, we'll take him.
What are you supposed to do with an medically depressed robot?
You think you've got problems? What are you supposed to do if you are a medically depressed robot? No, don't try and answer that. I'm 50,000 times more intelligent than you, and even I don't know the answer. Gives me a headache just trying to think down to your level.
Well, what's the result?
It's okay, but it smells a bit.
Okay, everybody, let's go.
Good afternoon, boys.
What's that? Oh, that's just the computer. I discovered it had an emergency backup personality, which I thought might be marginally preferable.
Now, this is going to be your first day on a strange planet, so I want you all wrapped up, snug and warm, and no playing with any naughty, bug-eyed monsters.
I'm sorry, I think we might have been better off with a slide rule.
Right, who said that?
Will you open up the exit hatch, please, computer?
Nothing to whoever said that. Hold up.
Oh, God.
Come on.
Computer.
I'm waiting. I can wait all day if necessary.
Computer, if you don't open that exit hatch this moment, I shall go straight to your major data banks with a very large axe and give you a reprogramming you'll never forget. Is that clear?
I can see this relationship as something we're all going to have to work at.
Thank you. Let's go.
It'll all end in tears. I know it.
Say, Fod, are you sure you know what you're doing? We've been attacked once already, you know.
Look, I promise you, the live population of this planet is nil plus the four of us.
And two white mice.
And two white mice, if you insist.
Oh, come on, let's go if we're going.
Earthman.
Ah, sir.
Could you sort of keep the robot with you and guard this end of the passageway, okay?
Guard? What from? You just said there's no one here.
Yeah, well, just for safety, okay?
Who's? Yours or mine?
Yeah, good lad. Okay, here we go.
Well, I hope you all have a really miserable time.
Don't worry, they will.
This is really spooky.
Look at all this. Galleries of derelict equipment just lying about. Does anyone know what happened to this place in the end? I mean, why did the Magrathians die out?
Something to do, I suppose.
If I had two heads like you, Zephyr, I could have hours of fun banging them against a wall.
Hey, shine the torch over there.
Where? Here?
Well, we aren't the first beings to go down this corridor in 5 million years, then.
What do you mean?
Look, fresh mouse droppings.
Oh, you're bloody mice.
What's that light down the corridor?
It's just a torch reflection.
There's definitely something happening down there.
No.
Listen.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is a very unevenly edited book and contains many passages which simply seemed to its editors like a good idea at the time. One of these supposedly relates the experiences of one Vit Vujagig, a quiet young student at the University of Mexi-Megalon, who pursued a brilliant academic career studying ancient philology, transformational ethics, and the wave harmonic theory of historical perception, and then, after a night of drinking pan-galactic gargle blasters with Zaphod Beeblebrox, became increasingly obsessed with the problem of what had happened to all the biros he'd bought over the past few years. There followed a long period of painstaking research, during which he visited all the major centres of Biro loss throughout the galaxy, and eventually came up with a rather quaint little theory which quite caught the public imagination at the time. Somewhere in the cosmos, he said, along with all the planets inhabited by humanoids, reptiloids, fishoids, walking treoids, and superintelligent shades of the colour blue, there was also a planet entirely given over to Biro life forms. And it was to this planet that unattended biros would make their way, slipping quietly through wormholes in space to a world where they knew they could enjoy a uniquely biroid lifestyle, responding to highly biro-orientated stimuli, in fact, leading the biro equivalent of the good life. And as theories go, this was already fine and pleasant until Vit Vujagig suddenly claimed to have found this planet and to have worked there for a while, driving a limousine for a family of cheap green retractables, whereupon he was taken away, locked up, wrote a book, and was finally sent into Tex exile, which is the usual fate reserved for those who are determined to make a fool of themselves in public. When one day an expedition was sent to the spatial coordinates that Vujagig had claimed for this planet, they discovered only a small asteroid inhabited by a solitary old man who claimed repeatedly that nothing was true, though he was later discovered to be lying. Meanwhile, on the surface of Magrathea, two suns have just set.
Night's falling. Look, robot, the stars are coming out.
I know. Wretched, isn't it?
But that sunset, I've never seen anything like it in my wildest dreams. The two suns. It was like mountains of fire boiling into space.
I've seen it. It's rubbish.
We only ever had the one sun at home. I came from a planet called Earth, you know.
I know. You keep going on about it. It sounds awful.
Oh, no. It was a beautiful place.
Did it have oceans?
Oh, yes. Great, wide, rolling, blue oceans.
Can't bear oceans.
Tell me, do you get on well with other robots?
Haven. Where are you going?
I just think I'll take a short walk.
Don't blame you.
Good evening.
Who?
Do you choose a cold night to visit our dead planet?
Who are you?
My name is not important.
You startled me.
Do not be alarmed, I will not harm you.
You shot at us. There were missiles.
Merely an automatic system. Ancient computers ranged in the long caves deep in the bowels of the planet tick away the dark millennia. I think they take the occasional pot shot to relieve the monotony. I'm a great fan of science, you know.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Ah.
You seem ill at ease.
Yes, well, no disrespect, but I gathered you were all dead.
Dead? No, we have but slept.
Slept?
Yes, through the economic recession, you see.
What?
Well, 5 million years ago, the galactic economy collapsed. than seeing that custom-built planets are something of a luxury commodity. You know we built planets,
oh,
do you?
Well, yes, I'd sort of gathered.
Fascinating trade. Doing the coastlines was always my favourite. Used to have endless fun doing all the little fiddly bits in fjords. In a way, the recession came, so we decided to sleep through it. We just programmed the computers to revive us when it was all over. They were index-linked to the galactic stock market prices, you see, so that we'd be revived, but everybody else had rebuilt the economy enough to be able to afford our rather expensive services again.
Good God, that's a pretty unpleasant way to behave, isn't it?
Is it? I'm sorry, I'm a bit out of touch. You must come with me. Great things are afoot. You must come now or you will be late.
Late? What for?
What is your name, human?
Dent, Arthur Dent.
Late, as in the late Dent Arthur Dent. It's a sort of threat, you see. I've never been very good at them myself, but I'm told they could be terribly effective.
All right, where do we go?
In my air car, we are going deep into the bowels of the planet, where even now our race is being revived from its 5 million year slumber.
Excuse me, what is your name, by the way?
My name is Slaty Bartfast.
I beg your pardon?
Slaty Bartfast.
Slaty Bartfast?
I said it wasn't important.
It is an important and popular fact that things are not always what they seem. For instance, on the planet Earth, man had always assumed that he was more intelligent than dolphins because he'd achieved so much, the Wheel, New York, wars and so on, whilst all the dolphins had ever done was muck about in the water having a good time. But conversely, the dolphins believed that they were more intelligent than man for precisely the same reasons. Curiously enough, the dolphins had long known of the impending demolition of Earth and had made many attempts to alert mankind to the danger, but most of their communications were misinterpreted as amusing attempts to punch footballs or whistle for titbits, so they eventually gave up and left the Earth by their own means, shortly before the Vogons arrived. The last ever dolphin message was misinterpreted as a surprisingly sophisticated attempt to do a double backward somersault through a hoop whilst whistling the Star-Spangled Banner. But in fact, the message was this: so long, and thanks for all the fish. In fact, there was only one species on the planet more intelligent than dolphins, and they spent a lot of their time in behavioral research laboratories running round inside wheels and conducting frighteningly elegant and subtle experiments on man.
Earthman, we are now deep in the heart of Megrafina. I should warn you that the chamber we are about to pass into does not literally exist within our planet. It is simply the gateway into a vast tract of hyperspace. It may disturb you.
Oh,
it scares the willies out of me. Hold tight. Welcome to our factory floor.
Right.
This is where we make most of our planets, you see.
Does this mean you're starting it all up again now?
No, for the sake of the galaxy, nearly reached an episode of it as yet. No, we've been awakened to perform just one extraordinary commission. It may interest you. There, in the distance in front of us.
Oh, no.
You see?
The Earth?
Well, the Earth Mark II, in fact. It seems that the first one was demolished 5 minutes too early, and the most vital experiment was destroyed. There's been a terrible hoo-ha, and so we're going to make a copy from our original blueprints.
Are you saying that you originally made the Earth?
Oh, yes. Did you ever go to a place, I think it's called Norway?
What? Oh, no, I didn't.
It did. That was one of mine. Won an award, and lovely crinkly edges.
I can't take this. Did I hear you say the Earth was destroyed 5 minutes too early?
Shocking cock-up. The mice were furious.
Mice?
Yes, the whole thing was their experiment, you see. A 10 million year research program to find the ultimate question. Big job, isn't it?
Look, would it save you all this bother if I just gave up and went mad now?
Has Slaty Bartfast flipped his lid? Are Ford, Zaphod and Trillian dying in fearful agony? Or have they simply slipped out for a quick meal somewhere? Will Arthur Dent feel better with a good hot drink inside him? Find out in next week's exciting installment of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
In that episode of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Peter Jones was the book. Richard Vernon was Slaughter Belfast, Simon Jones played Arthur Dent, and Jeffrey McGiven, Ford Prefect. Stephen Moore was Marvin, Mark Wing Davy, Zaphod Beeblebrox, Susan Sheridan, Trillian, and David Tate, Computer. The programme was written by Douglas Adams and produced by Geoffrey Perkins with the assistance of the BBC Radiophonic Workshop. Zaphod Beeblebrox is now appearing in No Sex Please, Where Amoeboids and Gatularians at the Brantus Vogan Star House.
I'm sorry, but I'd probably be able to cope better if I hadn't bruised my arm.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams, starring Peter Jones as The Book.
Arthur Dent, a perfectly ordinary Earthman, was rather surprised when his friend Ford Prefect suddenly revealed himself to be from a small planet somewhere in the vicinity of Betelgeuse, and not from Guildford after all. He was even more surprised when a few minutes later the Earth was unexpectedly demolished to make way for a new hyperspace bypass. But this was as nothing to their joint surprise when they are rescued from certain death by a stolen spaceship manned by Ford's semi-cousin, the infamous Zaphod Beeblebrox, and Trillian, a rather nice astrophysicist Arthur once met at a party in Islington. However, all four of them are soon totally overwhelmed with surprise when they discover that the ancient world of Magrathea, a planet famed in legend for its surprising trade in manufacturing other planets, is not as dead as it was supposed to be. For Zaphod, Ford and Trillian, surprise is pushed to its very limits when this happens. And when Arthur Dent encounters Slaughter Belfast, the Magrathean coastline designer, who won an award for his work on Norway, and learns that the whole history of mankind was run for the benefit of a few white mice anyway, surprise is no longer adequate, and he is forced to resort to astonishment.
Mice? What do you mean, mice? I think we must be talking at cross purposes. Mice to me mean the little white furry things with the cheese fixation and women standing screaming on tables in early 60s sitcoms.
Earthman, it is sometimes hard to follow your mode of speech. Remember, I have been asleep inside this planet of Magrathea for 5 million years and know little of these early 60s sitcoms of which you speak. These creatures you call mice, you see, are not quite as they appear. They are merely the protrusions into our dimension of vast, hyper-intelligent, pan-dimensional beings. The whole business with the cheese and the squeaking is just front.
A front?
Oh, yes, you see, that mice set up the whole Earth business. There's an epic experiment in behavioural psychology, a 10-million-year programme.
No, look, you've got it the wrong way round. It was us. We used to do the experiments on them.
A 10-million-year programme in which your planet Earth and its people formed the matrix of an organic computer. Now, I gather that the mice did arrange for you humans to conduct some primitively staged experiments on them, just to check how much you've really learned, to give you the odd prod in the right direction, you know, the sort of thing. Suddenly running down the maze the wrong way, eating the wrong bit of cheese, or unexpectedly dropping dead of myxomatosis.
Attention, please. Slaughter Belfast has been Slaughter Belfast as a visiting Earth creature. Please report immediately to the Works Reception Area. Thank you.
However, in the field of management relations, they're absolutely shocking.
Really?
Yes, well, you see, every time they give me an order, I just want to jump on a table and scream.
I can see that would be a problem.
There are, of course, many problems connected with life, of which some of the most popular are, why are people born, why do they die, and why do they spend so much of the intervening time wearing digital watches? Many millions of years ago, a race of hyper-intelligent, pan-dimensional beings got so fed up with all the constant bickering about the meaning of life, which used to interrupt their favorite pastime of Brockian ultra cricket, a curious game which involved suddenly hitting people for no readily apparent reason and running away, that they decided to sit down and solve the problem once and for all. And to this end, they built themselves a stupendous supercomputer which was so amazingly intelligent that even before its data banks had been connected up, it had started from first principles with I think, therefore I am, and had got as far as deducing the existence of rice pudding and income tax before anyone managed to turn it off. Could a mere computer solve the problem of life, the universe, and everything? Fortunately for posterity, there exists a tape recording of what transpired when the computer was given this particularly monumental task. Arthur Dent stops off in Slaty Bartfast's study to hear it.
What is this great task for which I, deep thought, the second greatest computer in the universe of time and space, have been called into existence?
Well, your task, computer, is to calculate...
This isn't right. Deep thought.
Speak, and I will hear.
Are you not, as we designed you to be, the greatest, most powerful computer in all creation?
I describe myself as the second greatest, and such I am.
But this is preposterous. Are you not a greater computer than the milliard gargantubrain at Maximegalon, which can count all the atoms in a star in a millisecond?
The milliard gargantubrain? A mere abacus. Mention it not.
And are you not a more fiendish disputant than the great hyperlobic omnicognate neutron wrangler, which
the
can
great
destroy...
hyperlobic omnicognate neutron wrangler can talk all four legs of an Arcturan megadonkey, but only I can persuade him to go for a walk afterwards. Molest me not with this pocket calculator stuff.
Then what's the problem?
I speak of none. But the computer that is to come after me.
Oh, come on. I think this is getting needlessly messianic.
You know nothing of future time. And yet, in my teeming circuitry, I can navigate the infinite delta streams of future probability and see that there must one day come a computer whose merest operational parameters I am not worthy to calculate, but which it will be my destiny eventually to design.
Can we get on and ask the question? Oh, deep thought computer, the task we have designed you to perform is this. We want you to tell us the answer.
The answer? The answer to what?
Life!
The universe.
Everything.
Tricky.
But can you do it?
Yes, I can do it.
You can?
There is an answer? A simple answer?
Yes. Life, the universe, and everything. There is an answer. But I'll have to think about it.
We demand that you can't keep us out.
Who are you? What do you want? We're busy.
I am Magic Thoris. And I demand that I am Broombondle.
Oh, you don't need to demand that.
All right. I am Broombondle, and that is not a demand. That is a solid fact. What we demand is solid facts.
No, we don't. That's precisely what we don't demand.
Oh, we don't demand solid facts. What we demand is a total absence of solid facts. I demand that I may or may not be Broombondle.
Who are you, anyway?
We are philosophers.
Though we may not be.
Yes, we...
We are quite definitely here as representatives of the amalgamated union of philosophers, sages, luminaries, and other professional thinking persons.
Mm-hmm.
And we want this machine off, and we want it off now.
What is off? We demand that you get rid of it.
Oh, what's the problem?
I'll tell you what the problem is, mate. Demarcation, that's the problem.
We demand that demarcation may or may not be the problem.
You just let the machines get on with the adding up and we'll take care of the eternal verities, thank you very much.
Yeah. By law, the quest for the ultimate truth is quite clearly the unalienable prerogative of your working fingers.
That's right.
I mean, what's the use of our sitting up all night saying there may
or may not be?
Or may not be a god if this machine comes along next morning and gives you his telephone number.
We demand rigidly defined areas of doubt and uncertainty.
Might I make an observation at this point.
You keep out of this, Metal Nose.
We demand that that machine not be allowed to think about this problem.
If I might make an observation.
We'll go on strike.
That's right. You'll have a national philosopher's strike on your hands.
Who will that inconvenience?
Never you mind who it'll inconvenience, you box of blacklegging binary bits. It'll hurt, Buster. It'll hurt.
If I might make an observation. All I want to say is that my circuits are now irrevocably committed to computing the answer to life, the universe, and everything.
Ah! Vast! Come
on! The program will take me 7.5 million years to run.
7.5 million years?
Yes, I said I'd have to think about it, didn't I? And it occurs to me that running a program like this is bound to cause sensational public interest.
And so,
any philosophers who are quick off the mark are going to clean up in the prediction business.
Prediction business?
Obviously. You just get on the pundit circuit. You all go on the chat shows and the color supplements and violently disagree with each other about what answer I'm eventually going to produce. And if you get yourselves clever agents, you'll be on the gravy train for life.
Bloody hell, now, that's what I call thinking. Here, Vroomfondle, why do we never think of things like that?
Dunno. Think our minds must be too highly trained, Magic Thighs.
But I don't understand what all this has got to do with the Earth and mice and things.
All will become clear to you, Earthman. I'm not anxious to hear what the computer had to say 7.5 million years later.
Oh, well, yes, of course. Quite.
Here is the recording of the events of that fateful day.
Old people who wait in the shadow of deep thought, honored descendants of Vroomfondle and Magic Thighs, the greatest and most truly interesting pundits the universe has ever known, the time of waiting is over! 7.5 million years our race has waited for this great and hopefully enlightening day. The day of the answer! Never again will we wake up in the morning and think, who am I? What is my purpose in life? Does it really, cosmically speaking, matter if I don't get up and go to work? Or today we will finally learn, once and for all, the plain and simple answer to all these nagging little problems of life, the universe, and everything. Can enjoy our game of Brockian ultra cricket in the firm and comfortable knowledge that the meaning of life is now well and truly sorted out.
75,000 generations ago, our ancestors set this program in motion.
An awesome prospect. Deep thought prepares to speak.
Good evening.
Good evening, old Deep Thought. Do you have...
An answer for you? Yes, I have.
There really is one.
There really is one.
To everything? To the great question of life, the universe, and everything?
Yes.
And are you ready to give it to us?
I am.
Now?
Now.
Wow.
Though I don't think you're going to like it.
It doesn't matter, we must know it.
Now?
Yes, now.
All right.
Well?
You're really not going to like it.
Tell us.
All right. The answer to everything.
Yes?
Life, universe, and everything.
Yes?
Is.
Yes?
Is.
Yes?
42.
We are going to get lynched, you know that.
It was a tough assignment.
42?
I think the problem such as it was too broadly based. You never actually stated what the question was.
It was the ultimate question. The question of life, the universe, and everything.
Exactly. Now you know that the answer to the ultimate question of life, the universe, and everything is 42. All you need to do now is find out what the ultimate question is.
All right. Can you please tell us the question?
The ultimate question.
Yes.
Of life, the universe...
And everything?
And everything.
Yes. But can you do it?
No.
Oh, God.
But I'll tell you who can.
Who? Tell us. Tell us. Who is...
I speak of none but the computer that is to come after me.
What computer?
A computer whose nearest observational parameters I am not worthy to calculate, and yet I will design it for you. A computer which can calculate the question to the ultimate answer. A computer of such infinite and subtle complexity that organic life itself will form part of its operational matrix and will tell you all the Earth.
Oh, what a dull name.
So there you have it. Deep Thought designed it, we built it, and you lived on it.
And the Vogons came and destroyed it 5 minutes before the program was completed.
Yes. 10 million years of planning and work gone. Just like that. Well, that's bureaucracy for you.
You know, all this explains a lot of things. All through my life, I've had this strange, unaccountable feeling that something was going on in the world. And no one would tell me what it was.
No, that's just perfectly normal paranoia. Everyone in the universe has that.
Well, perhaps it means that somewhere outside...
Maybe. Who cares? Perhaps I'm old and tired, but I always think that the chances of finding out what really is going on are so absurdly remote that the only thing to do is to say, hang the sense of it and just keep yourself occupied. Look at me. I designed coastlines. I got an award for Norway. Where's the sense in that? None that I've been able to make out. I've been doing fjords all my life. For a fleeting moment, they become fashionable and I get a major award. In this replacement Earth we're building, they've given me Africa to do. And, of course, I'm doing it with all fjords again, because I happen to like them. And I'm old-fashioned enough to think that they give a lovely baroque feel to a continent. And they tell me it's not equatorial enough. What does it matter? Science has achieved some wonderful things, of course, but I'd far rather be happy than right any day.
And are you?
No. That's where it all falls down, of course.
Pity. It sounded like quite a good lifestyle otherwise.
Attention, please, Slotty Buckfast. Would Slotty Buckfast and the visiting Earth creature please report immediately? Repeat immediately to the works reception area. Come on, you guys. The mice aren't wanting to hang about Mr. Venture all day.
Come on, I suppose we'd better go and see what they want.
I seem to be having this tremendous difficulty with my lifestyle. As soon as I reach some kind of definite policy about what is my kind of music and my kind of restaurant and my kind of overdraft, people start blowing up my kind of planet and throwing me out of their kind of spaceships. It's so hard to build up anything coherent. Oh, I'm sorry, all this must sound rather fatuous to you.
Yes, I thought so.
Just forget I ever said it.
It is, of course, well known that careless talk costs lives, but the full scale of the problem is not always appreciated. For instance, at the very moment that Arthur Dent said, "I seem to be having this tremendous difficulty with my lifestyle," a freak wormhole opened up in the fabric of the space-time continuum and carried his words far, far back in time across almost infinite reaches of space to a distant galaxy where strange and warlike beings were poised on the brink of frightful interstellar battle. The two opposing leaders were meeting for the last time, and a dreadful silence fell across the conference table as the commander of the Lehergs, resplendent in his black jeweled battle shorts, gazed levelly at the Gagugvant leader squatting opposite him in a cloud of green, sweet-smelling steam, and with a million sleek and horribly beweaponed star cruisers poised to unleash electric death at his single word of command, challenged the vile creature to take back what it had said about his mother. The creature stirred in his sickly, boiling vapor, and at that very moment, the words,
"I seem to be having this tremendous difficulty with my lifestyle,"
drifted across the conference table. Unfortunately, in the Laherne tongue, this was the most dreadful insult imaginable, and there was nothing for it but to wage terrible war. Eventually, of course, it was realized that the whole thing had been a ghastly mistake, and so the two opposing battle fleets settled their few remaining differences in order to launch a joint attack on our galaxy, now positively identified as the source of the offending remark. For thousands more years, the mighty ships tore across the empty wastes of space and finally dived screaming onto the planet Earth, where, due to a terrible miscalculation of scale, the entire battle fleet was accidentally swallowed by a small dog. Those who study the complex interplay of cause and effect in the history of the universe say that this sort of thing is going on all the time, but are powerless to prevent it. It's just life, they say. Meanwhile, Arthur Dent is about to discover the answer to the disturbing question posed in last week's installment. Are his companions, Ford, Zaphod, and Trillian, lying bleeding to death in a subterranean corridor? Or have they merely slipped out for a quick meal somewhere?
Arthur, you're safe.
Am I? Oh, good.
Hi, Arthur. Come and join us.
What happened to you?
Well, our hosts here sort of attacked us with a fantastic dismodulating anti-phase stun ray and then invited us to this amazingly keen meal by way of making it up to us.
Hosts? What hosts? I can't see any hosts.
Welcome to lunch, Earth creature.
What? Who said that? Oh, yeah, there's a mouse on the table.
Oh, haven't you found out yet, Arthur?
Found out what? I see, yes. Oh, yes. I just wasn't quite prepared for the full reality of it.
Arthur, let me introduce you. This is Benji Mouse.
Hi.
Hi.
And this is Frankie, Mouse.
Nice to meet you.
It seems they control quite a large sector of the universe in our dimension.
But aren't they...
Yes, they are the mice I took with me from the Earth. It seems our whole journey has been stage-managed from the beginning.
Excuse me.
Yes. Thank you, Smarty Bouncers. You may go.
Oh, well, thank you, sir. I'll just go and get on with some of my fjords, then.
In fact, that won't be necessary.
What?
We won't be requiring the new Earth after all. We've had this rather interesting proposition put to us.
You can't mean that. I've got 1,000 glaciers poised and ready to roll over Africa.
Well, perhaps you can take a quick skiing holiday before you dismantle them.
Skiing holiday? Those glaciers are works of art. Elegantly sculpted contours, soaring pinnacles of ice, deep, majestic ravines. It would be sacrilege to go skiing on high up.
Thank you, Smarty Master. That will be all.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Well, goodbye, Earthman. I hope the lifestyle comes together.
Goodbye, then. Sorry about the fjords.
Now, Earth creature, we have, as you know, been more or less running your planet for the last 10 million years in order to find this wretched thing called the ultimate question.
Why?
No, we already thought of that one, but it doesn't fit the answer.
No, I mean, why have you been doing it?
Well, eventually just habit, I think, to be brutally honest. And this is more or less the point. We are sick to the teeth of the whole thing and the prospect of doing it all over again on account of those winnet-ridden Vogons, quite frankly, gives me the screaming heebie-jeebies. You know what I mean? We've been offered a quite enormously fat contract to do the 5D TV chat show and lecture circuit, and I'm very much inclined to take it.
I would, wouldn't you, Ford?
Oh, yes, jump at it like a shot.
But that's exactly the attitude those philosophers took. Does no one in this galaxy do anything other than appear on chat shows?
The point is this. We are in a position to give you a very important commission. We still want to find the ultimate question because it gives us a lot of bargaining muscle with the 5D TV companies. So, it's worth a lot of money. quite clearly, if we're sitting there in the studio mentioning that we happen to know the answer to life, the universe, and everything, and then eventually have to admit that it's 42, then I think the show is probably quite short.
Yes, but doesn't that mean you've got to go through your whole 10 million year program again?
We think there might be a shortcut. Your agent has...
That's me.
Is it?
Your agent has suggested that both you and Earthgirl, as last-generation products of the computer matrix, are probably in an ideal position to find the question for us, and find it quickly. Go out and find it, and we'll make you a reasonably rich man.
We're holding out for extremely rich.
All right, extremely rich. You drive a hard bargain, Beeblebrox. Oh, Bell, what is it now?
Precious
ship has landed on the planet. Intruders now in the works reception area. Defense stations, defense stations. Come on, you guys, will you? Let's go!
Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
The police! Tell them that's good. We've got to get out. Yeah, it's this wretched spacecraft we stole, and I left them a note explaining how they could make a profit on the insurance claim, but it doesn't seem to work.
Oh, come on then, let's move!
How?
No.
We will find it. Come on, get out of here!
Thanks for the meal, guys. Sorry we've got to run.
Which way, Zaphod?
Well, I guess I'd say down here.
Hold on, let's go.
Okay, people rocks. The way right there. We've got you covered.
You won't try and get it all for
us? Okay, this way.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
Okay.
We don't want to shoot you, people rocks.
Shoot me, fine.
We caught it.
Oh, hell. I think I brought my adrenaline pills. All right. Behind this computer bank. Get down. Hey, they're shooting at us.
Yeah.
I thought they said they didn't want to do that.
Yeah, I thought they said that.
Hey, I thought you said you didn't want to shoot us. What did he say?
He said it isn't easy being a cop.
Well, surely that's his problem, isn't it?
I'd have thought so.
Hey, listen. I think we've got enough problems of our own with you shooting at us, so if you could avoid laying your personal problems on us as well, I think we'd probably find it easier to cope.
Now, see here, buddy. You're not dealing with any dumb, two-bit trigger-puffing morons with low hairlines, little big ears, and no conversation.
Nah.
We're a couple of intelligent, caring guys who you're probably liking your metasocially.
That's right. I'm really sensitive.
These guys.
I think I preferred it when they were shooting.
So are you gonna come quietly or are you gonna let us blast you?
Which would you rather?
You still there?
Yes!
Where is Joy doing that at all?
Tell, we're stuck. Have you any idea how we're gonna deal with these loonies?
Now listen to this.
Okay, far away.
Oh, God, that was really dumb. Sorry, misunderstanding there.
Nice one, Zaphod.
People Brooks, either you all give yourselves up now and let us beat you up a bit. Though not very much, of course, because we are firmly opposed to needless violence. We blow up this entire planet, possibly one or two others we noticed on our way out here.
But that's crazy. You wouldn't blow up this entire planet just to get a bloody spaceship back. Much longer, fellas. It's been really nice knowing you. I just want to say that.
Yeah, it's really been great, and it was really nice bumping into you again.
The computer bank is absorbing a hell of a lot of energy. I think it's about to blow.
It's a shame we never managed to get the work done and write it in the book.
I thought it was rather promising.
Yeah.
What book? The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, that thing.
Look, I hate to say this, but this thing really is going to blow up.
Assuming our heroes survive this latest reversal in their fortunes, will they find somewhere reasonably interesting to go now? Will Arthur Dent or Trillian manage to find the question to the ultimate answer? Who will they meet at the restaurant at the end of the universe? Find out in next week's exciting installment of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
In that episode of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Peter Jones was the book. Richard Vernon was Slaty Bartfast. Simon Jones played Arthur Dent. Geoffrey McGiven, Ford Prefect and Deep Thought. Mark Wing Davies, Zaphod Beeblebrox. Susan Sheridan, Trillian. Jonathan Adams, Magic Thighs and the Cheerleader. Ray Hassett, the first computer programmer, Bang Bang and PA Voice. Jeremy Brown, second computer programmer. James Broadbent, Broom Fondle and Shooty. Peter Hawkins, Frankie Mouse. And David Tate, Benji Mouse. The ultimate answer to life, the universe, and everything was revealed by kind permission of the amalgamated union of philosophers, sages, luminaries, and other professional thinking persons. The program was written by Douglas Adams and produced by Geoffrey Perkins, with the assistance of the BBC Radiophonic Workshop.
Thank you. It's not a